You're listening to Downtown Depot, where we track the ins and outs of Waco business. I'm Austin Meek of WacoBusinessNews.com, and my guest today is food truck owner Young Day Moon. You may have noticed him recently featured in Baylor Magazine as one of their downtown bears changing the face of Waco. Or perhaps you saw him on the podium at the Texas Food Truck Showdown when his deep-fried tamale balls took home hardware for the best international food. As Waco grows, so does the diversity of its citizenry, and Young Day and I dive deep on the benefits and difficulties of serving ethnic food in Waco. But first, it's the word on the street. I've started a new series on WacoBusinessNews.com called WBN Analysis. Staff at the Waco Tribune Herald, like Cassie Smith, Mike Copeland, and JB Smith, who you recently heard on Downtown Depot, do a great job of documenting the daily news of downtown, what we in the industry refer to as the beat. They're the major forces in the galaxy of Waco business journalism, rotating at a consistent clip and spitting out terrific content on a daily basis. If they're planets, then I'm a rogue star operating outside of their gravitational pull, which means that while they're paid to cover the beat, my primary concern is bringing you the heat. I talk with movers and shakers in the downtown scene to tell the story behind the story, the opinions and ideas that may not be appropriate for a lauded institution like the Trib, but are perfect for a modern vehicle like Waco Business News. When you visit WacoBusinessNews.com, you'll find a WBN analysis piece I wrote on a J.B. Smith article from last week discussing a city-owned property on 4th Street in between Austin and Washington Avenues. Two groups submitted plans to the city for the redevelopment of the block, and I present my findings of the two groups and thoughts on their proposals. I try to analyze every big business news story that breaks in downtown Waco, so after you read the facts in the Trib, head over to WacoBusinessNews.com for opinions on what's really happening here. Roshan Takor recently opened Waco's first full-service Indian restaurant on Austin Avenue, in between Dichotomy and Gourmet Gallery. He's one of a number of restaurateurs bringing authentic ethnic cuisine to downtown Waco. Everything at Stonehearth Cafe, from Tony Bryant's hand-painted mural on the outside to the colorful mudras on the interior walls, is meant to evoke the spectacle of Indian street food and give visitors a slice of daily life.
The tandoor ovens we have, I mean, there's just magic that comes out of that. It's an art by itself, keeping those temperatures, you know, above 600 degrees at, you know, as much as they can possible, and then cooking the breads in 2 minutes, 3 minutes at a time, you know, while sticking their whole hand down there trying to make sure they're placed properly to cook, you know, whatnot. It's a little bit of work. It's a little good artwork that they get to, you know, showcase. And obviously the show that comes with all of that as well. That goes with the culture, like I said, the fast hustle bustle pace of trying to get out dishes as fast as they can because you have hungry people ready.
Given that Stonehearth is Waco's only Indian restaurant, I imagine there are a lot of people curious and perhaps hesitant about trying a new cuisine. Clint Trimble, general manager at Stonehearth, assured me that while the flavors may be new, the building blocks are familiar.
A hodgepodge of flavors that most people are used to, they've just never had all those flavors at once in their mouth happening. It's sweet, it's savory, it's salty. There's so many different areas of India that represent different flavor profiles, and that's one thing that we tried to incorporate into the restaurant as a whole.
They offer regional staples from northern, eastern, and southern India, along with one of the most extensive vegan and vegetarian menus in the area.
We're trying to bring Indian food and a different cuisine culture to Waco. And what better place to do that than right beside Baylor campus off 35 in what, as I said earlier, should be a bustling area of town, kind of a mecca of what's to do on Friday night.
Stonehearth has been received warmly by the community and will be joined in a few months when Clay Pot, a Vietnamese restaurant currently on I-35 by Common Grounds, moves to Franklin Avenue.
I think it's interesting. I think that a lot of other cuisines, as they come in this area as well, will find that it's very comforting to find that how accepting, like, you know, Waco and surrounding greater Waco area really is to ethnic foods and ethnic culture in general.
I spoke with Tyne Lee, one of the owners of Clay Pot, along with Roshan and Clint, for a Waco Business News article that I published last week. Check that out to hear more about the Lee's plan for their downtown restaurant in between Barnett's Pub and True Love Bar. Writing that article got me thinking about cultural diversity in Waco, so I invited my good friend Youngdae Moon, who's Korean, to join me in the KWBU studios to talk about his life and work. Youngdae owns and operates Club Sandwich, an Asian food truck that parks at the Magnolia Silos. I've excerpted a few parts of our discussion for Downtown Depot, but trust me, you want to hear this whole thing. I'll post it on wakeupbusinessnews.com on Monday, but here's a part of that conversation. Youngdae, welcome to Downtown Depot. So happy to have you.
Thanks for having me.
I love starting the show out by asking my guest what their history is, what brought them to Waco. So tell me a little bit about your story.
I came to Waco for Baylor in 96, so I'm pretty old. It's kind of an interesting story. Well, maybe not, but Baylor was pretty much my last choice, but it was my first acceptance letter that I got. And so my first choice was UT.
So where were you growing up?
In Houston, okay. From Houston. And so my mom did not want me to go to Texas because probably 90% of my friends were going there. And Korean moms, parents of my generation that are Korean, they have they read like the local Korean newspapers and stuff. And it's kind of like half news, half tabloid. And they have all these like phony statistics that said like 90% of Korean kids that end up going to Texas, UT, fail out like after the first year because there's so many more Asian kids, like other fellow Koreans and stuff that, you know, growing up in the States, you know, you're used to surrounded by, you know, more white kids. And so all they do is just hang out with each other and they don't study. And so my mom did not want that to happen to me. So she sent in my Baylor deposit and registration without telling me. And so the entire first semester, I was only in town 2 weekends, homecoming weekend, because all my friends from UT came up here. And then the weekend after my last final, the rest of the time I went back home to Houston or down to Austin to hang out with my friends that I'd grown up with. And I didn't even have a car. So like, you know, my friends would come pick me up, like go out of their way, like, you know, 2 hours round trip or whatever. Anyway, so the entire first semester I was just looking to transfer. And then something clicked second semester where I started to really kind of get involved and explore Waco and, you know, kind of it was nothing like it looks like now. You know, there was way less things to do. And it was just crickets, like that whole complex with crickets. That was the newest thing. I think it had opened like the year before my freshman year. But in spite of that, kind of, you know, explored a little bit and found, you know, little things to do like the park and, you know, Cameron Park and just kind of driving around. And really, that's when I started to really kind of come to appreciate Waco. And I still didn't think I was going to stay here this long, but, you know, 20 years later, I'm still in town. So
that sounds so similar to my start at A&M. So after I graduated from high school, this was in 2007, I took a year off before I went to college, and I moved to Barcelona when I was 18. Drank a lot of wine, played a lot of beach volleyball, and basically woke up every day with a totally new agenda. Mm-hmm. I spent a year in Europe and then decided that College Station would be the best place for me. Mm-hmm. And waking up in College Station is not the same as waking up and looking at the Swiss Alps.
Right.
And I was just like you. I was heading to Austin every weekend. I was getting stir crazy. And it wasn't until my second semester at A&M that I realized, okay, so the city obviously doesn't have the cultural institutions and other activities I'm looking for, but the caliber of people are the types I want to surround myself with. And I found once I decided, hey, I'm going to stay in College Station for this one weekend, I actually met some people and I loved it. And it made me really enjoy my time at A&M. Was that similar to what you went through at Baylor when you finally decided, hey, I'm going to start investing in some people, spend some time here, and then it changed?
Yeah, I mean, that's pretty much it. I think going in, I had, you know, because of the way I ended up at Baylor, my mind was already, you know, closed off to the prospects of making any meaningful friendships or building relationships. The people that I did know coming in, there were a few kids from my high school that we were friends. We weren't like really close, but you know, we were friends. And then a few people the way it works in the Korean church community is like when you go to college, you know, the older kids kind of hook you up with, you know, friends their age that are at the school that you're attending and whatever. And I would go to like dinners and stuff just to be polite or whatever. But, you know, I would just the entire time I'd just be thinking of, you know, I'm going to go home and call my friends at, you know, other schools. And then I guess really the first time was that homecoming weekend because we all hung out together. I had fun, wasn't, you know, miserable, and really was open to the fact that, you know, these are – this is going to sound really snobby. Like, these are, you know, worthwhile people to get to know. And, sure. Yeah, like, you know, once we forged those friendships, you know, kind of doing things, activities together. Because, you know, like you said – I grew up in Houston. I was born and raised in Houston. I was used to, you know, living in a city that had all these things to do. Like, even high school, we'd stay out, go bowling till like 2 in the morning. And, you know, in Waco, most things shut down after 10 or something. Like, you know, there's not a whole lot of things to do late at night. And so, yeah, it was basically all perspective. And, you know, once I was open to trying to enjoy my time here, yeah, it really became pretty easy.
So you keep on referencing growing up in a Korean household and your mother. What was that like for you?
So it sucked. Well, at the time it sucked.
Everybody has strict parents, yeah, right? But like, what was unique about having Korean parents growing up in that culture, in that household?
So Korean parents are known to be really strict, disciplined. It took me 10 years to graduate. I started in 96. I graduated in 06 because, you know, like every other Asian kid, I went the, you know, pre-med route. I really didn't care for it. But, you know, just any – I changed my major 4 times hopping around from anything medical related, like pre-med to like physical therapy to, you know, all this stuff. And then finally, you know, I'd been around so long that they're like, just pick a major that you like and graduate.
And this is your parents telling you this?
Yeah, my parents,
this is
yeah.
your counselor at Baylor?
No, my parents.
Trying to finally
yeah,
get you out of her office?
But Korean moms especially are notorious for being – kind of over the top and crazy, like, and especially mine was, you know, just really overprotective, paranoid of things, just, you know, freaking out. And so being fully Americanized myself, kind of like the cultural differences between, you know, a parent or parents that you know, were used to doing things a certain way, like, you know, even the way relationships between, you know, kid and parent or elder and things like that, the career track expected of, you know, Korean children. It was a bit of a culture shock for them. And, you know, cause American kids are more independent, I guess, we fought a lot and, you know, growing up. And especially with, you know, college coming and where high school, you know, it matters. But it matters in terms of getting into schools and things like that. But, you know, your grades don't really matter. But once you get to college, that's when grades really matter. You learn what you're going to do and everything. And I was just kind of aimless because, like I said, up to that point, my parents had always kind of laid out a track for me. And so, growing up as the first American generation of Korean kids, it was, yeah. And all my Korean friends will tell you, like, there's always conflict. There's always a lot of fighting. Parents saying, you know, you're ungrateful or you don't know what's going on. Kids saying, oh, you know, you're from the old country. You don't know what it's like here in America and everything like that. So, it was strict. But then, you know, looking back on it, there's always a lot of love. You know, you come to appreciate the things that your parents did for you. I mean, I know that's not, you know, relegated, you know, strictly to Korean kids, but you tend to the memories of all that discipline and strict upbringing kind of tend to soften over the years.
What was your life like when you were operating the truck and constantly moving to different locations?
It was It was so I don't, by nature, I don't know much about like vehicles or, you know, I don't know about like mechanics of automobiles or even, you know, things about like equipment and stuff in the kitchen. So I pretty much learn on the fly, like every aspect of the business, you know, a lot of trial and error, a lot of errors, but, you know, I would figure it out. So having a restaurant on wheels combined, you know, two problems of like running a restaurant kitchen and also, you know, taking care of and maintaining a vehicle. Mm. And so it was a lot of stress, like, you know, having to find a place to park and store the vehicle overnight that's safe, and then, you know, finding a location, driving. Now, I got lucky where Brett, the owner of Dichotomy, was a good friend of mine. Well, I mean, we're still friends. We have a falling out. But before he opened Dichotomy, you know, he worked at Starbucks, and it was a Starbucks I frequented. And so we, even back then, it's kind of cool that we always talked about, like, oh, well, this is what I want. I was like, I want to open a food truck. And he's like, oh, really? I want to open, like, a really great coffee shop with a bar. And so we kind of say, oh, that'd be cool if we both did, you know, accomplished, you know, fulfilled our dreams, and then I could park my food truck in front of your coffee shop. He's like, yeah, that'd be so awesome. Let's work on that. And then it happened. You know, he gave me permission to park in front of their shop. And so finding a parking location wasn't a big deal because I was in front of Dichotomy all the time.
But it should be said, though, that finding a location to park your truck is not an easy thing. It's easy if the property owner happens to be on board. And we got to give – I personally have to give Brett – his name's Brett Jameson – give him so much credit for allowing Pokios to park there. Now Stonehearth and Gourmet Gallery are there next to them. But Brett really has helped with Sergio's parking there every morning. Like, he is so generous with the space that they have there and really pro-development of downtown.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a core group of people that I trust, or trust their opinion, trust their instincts, trust with venting if I have things to vent about, that are all kind of consider like the downtown family, and Brett is one of them. He's, you know, he's by nature, he's a grumpy guy, doesn't like, you know, hang out in like big groups or whatever, but, you know, he's real smart. Dichotomy is great. It's, you know, he doesn't compromise on like his vision, but he is also, for as grumpy as he is, like, he wants to see other businesses succeed. He doesn't want anything from them. Like, he didn't want me to pay him. I mean, there are a couple of places, you know, businesses we're talking, you know, we talk about now, we're like, yeah, let's see how we can help them, you know. We don't want like any, we don't want to get into that business or whatever, but like, he just wants to see certain businesses that he thinks would be great for Waco succeed, because it'll be great for Waco, you know. And so, you know, they've been more than generous. And yeah, there are more and more trucks now since I've opened, so it's a little more difficult. It is more difficult to find spaces and find people willing to let you park in front of there. But yeah, I did have it a lot easier than, you know, some places do nowadays, some other food trucks have nowadays.
One thing that has been an interesting development downtown recently is Stonehearth Indian Cafe opened. Clay Pot is going to be bringing Vietnamese cuisine to downtown in the next couple months. What are your thoughts on ethnic food and culture in Waco and its evolution?
I love it. I think so on a personal level, we've been clamoring for Stonehearth, you know, for ever since we first heard about it. Now, it took a little longer for them to open than, you know, we expected. But once they did, it was as good as, you know, we'd hoped. I think in Indian food, I think I saw maybe it was some informal poll or whatever. You know, in the comments of like Facebook or like the newspaper or whatever. But Indian food was one of the most requested or desired categories of food in Waco for a long time.
Wow.
So to have an actual legit Indian restaurant in town is great. I think, Clay Pot's been, you know, killing it for years, you know, decades or whatever. I think it's great that. Because I don't know if this is going to be offensive, but, you know, it's always kind of like, you know, the stereotype or the notion of a small town is like, oh, they're closed-minded. They're, you know, it's all hillbillies who only want, like, chicken fried steak and, you know, whatever. But then Waco is, you know, surprisingly diverse enough. Then, you know, people, you know, being so close to, like, Dallas and Austin, like, people go out of town and, you know, are exposed to these kind of ethnic foods. And so there's, you know, Waco's got a really good appetite for having tried or at least being open to trying, you know, foods from different cultures that, you know, even if it sounds weird, that, you know, they're willing to give it a shot. And I think, you know, slowly more and more kind of entrepreneurial spirits are bringing, you know, those different categories and, you know, types of food to town. And, you know, it's always difficult because, like, you have a concept or have an idea of, like, oh, this would work, but then you got to execute it well. But, I mean, like I said, like, the Stoneheart is doing well. That's kind of like me wanting to bring more and more authentic Korean food to town eventually. Vietnamese is doing well. Trying to think of what else, what kind of food, because Bangkok's doing Thai. Obviously, we've got a lot of legit Mexican restaurants. Yeah, I'm excited to see what happens, like, you know, with, you know, over the next few years with the diversity of cuisine in town.
You were recently featured in Baylor Magazine as one of the downtown bears changing the face of downtown Waco.
That's kind of a stretch. Yeah.
That's what the article reported. Whether it's true or not is to be debated, but you certainly have become one of the most recognizable figures in downtown, whether it's through Club Sandwich or simply just being a dichotomy, getting coffee, hanging out. You're a face that people recognize and a personality that people have grown to love. And frankly, I miss having downtown. I don't get to see as much of you now that you're there in the silos. When that article came out, and just thinking about your life from a 30,000-foot view, is it weird to realize that you are one of the faces of a city and of a city that not only is this – it's not just this podunk town in Texas, but this is a city that really is on the map and is growing and its star.
I think – well, so first of all, like, a little funny background on that. I got called, you know, to say, hey, they were interested in doing an article in the Baylor Magazine. I was like, oh, okay, what's it about? And they're like, oh, it's about, like, you know, Baylor alumni who are, like, movers and shakers. I was like, wait, are you sure you have the Young Day Moon? Like, and they're like, yeah. I was like, but I just own a food truck. Like, you know, like, I thought it was people who redeveloped massive blocks or, you know, found a cure for something or whatever. So it was pretty funny. It was, you know, it was an honor and flattering, whatever. We've gotten a lot of good press over the last, you know, however many months between that and winning an award at the Food Truck Festival and some other things. So it's been pretty cool. But, yeah, it is I don't know that.
Young Day. Maybe this is you being, like, a typical Asian and, like, deferring all of the, you know, wonderful lauds that I'm throwing at you. But you are – and perhaps it is because of your ethnicity – but, like, you are changing the face of what Waco looks like. You are changing the culture here.
Yeah, I mean, I think maybe it's, you know, if so, it's because, like, you know, I am a minority, and so it's kind of like, you know, a face of diversity. I mean, I think if my business just, like, the food sucked and, you know, I ran it in a really terrible way, it wouldn't happen. So I think, you know, we run it as well as we can. But I think, yeah, I think it's not so much that I'm doing anything extraordinary or, like, super special, but just the fact that it's, like, an example of, like, the diversity that's growing in town, you know? So maybe they put me up there or whatever. And I think, you know, like, I like to think we do it the right way and, you know, offer a product or service that people like. And, you know, they want me to be a face of whatever, that's great. I'm happy to do it. But I think it's more, you know, like an example of, you know, like what so many other people are doing, you know, in downtown. And maybe just because I've done it, you know, maybe longer than others, but you know, I'm sure they'll find other people to represent or be a downtown mover and shaker.
Well, I've taken up a lot of your time. I'll get you out of here on this. What's your favorite thing about doing business in Waco?
I really love that it's been a little bit, you know, like I said, I'm not at the truck every day now, so it's a little more difficult. But I love that it's intimate enough, like small enough, that you really get to know people, you know. I think one of the things I really enjoy about my business is that we focus more on service than like the actual food. I mean, I don't want the food to be bad, like I said, but you know, focus on service and like our customer service. And through that, we really get to know people. And you know, like you said, like if I go to Dichotomy, I'll recognize a lot of people, but then, you know, through mutual friends, I'll meet, you know, new people, and we really kind of build a relationship with them. I think that's really, you know, if possible, if feasible, like to build a relationship with your customers, and you know, not just like beyond the oh, here's your food and here's our money, like transaction. It's like really kind of getting to know them and you know, building that relationship and connection to the community, whether it's through like the nonprofit, you know, stuff that we try to do every so often, or you know, just being there for somebody's party to like have a good time, you know, but kind of going above and beyond. It's Waco is, you know, there's a lot of peculiarities with Waco, like, you know, with the way that people, you know, the businesses, you're able to run a business in town, but also it's great because, again, it's a small community and pretty intimate, and I don't think you can have that kind of relationship with your customers as easily like in a giant town like, you know, metropolitan city like Houston or Dallas or Austin.
Well, Youngday, thank you so much for joining me on Downtown Depot. I really appreciate
Thanks
it.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks again to Youngday Moon for joining me on Downtown Depot this week. And be sure to visit WacoBusinessNews.com on Monday to hear an extended interview with this Waco favorite. Keep up with us on Facebook and Twitter in between shows by following @WacoBusinessNews. And don't forget that you can access previous episodes on our website or through Apple Podcasts or the NPR One app. I'm your host, Austin Meek, and you've been listening to Downtown Depot, where we track the ins and outs of Waco business.